It's the Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news from the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm Johnny B.
And I'm Johnny Smacks. Welcome to podcast 138, coming to you like gravy over your roast dinner. On this week's podcast, he's loud, funny, a little bit saucy, and he can tell a great story. We chat to rugby legend James Haskell.
He doesn't believe in baby food. His children went straight from the tit to the spud. But Noel Furlong will be back with the news.
She's done her hair toss and is feeling good as hell. Maureen is here with her mystery topic.
And as traditional as your parents buying you crisps and a mineral to keep you quiet when you're in the pub, we round off the podcast with our
Yurts and Dirts of the week.
John, for me it was smoky bacon and Sidona.
Yeah, I liked the old bacon fries and a Lucozade. I once had around 9 pints of Lucozade one Sunday. I could barely get up for school the next day. To come down was atrocious. Anyway, if you're a new listener to the podcast, stop, pause and rewind in the words of Craig David and listen back from episode one. It'll all make much more sense to you, because what's about to come, you're going to have to know the backstory. It's just better that way. Now, before commencing with proceedings, matters arising from last week's podcast.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we had great response to the farmers, but our new thread of correspondence is even better.
The farmers never had a number one single, lad.
Bass Hunter, ladies and gentlemen, everybody's favourite DJ who toured Ireland about a million times. Orlat was in touch to saying, I was staying in a nice hotel in Killarney with my family. One morning, I was in the hotel hot tub with my sister and we got chatting to a fella. He ended up telling us he was singing in Killarney that night. Me, being younger at the time, shouted, sing us a song or something. He proceeded to sing a few lines of, Now You're Gone. We both agreed he was a good singer and we went on our way. A few months passed and I was watching the music channels, only to realise a familiar face was on the screen. There he was, Bass Hunter. I hung my head in shame that I had told Bass Hunter he was a good singer without having a clue who he really was.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. Another anonymous person said, a lot of anonymous stuff coming in about Bass Hunter. this person says, lads, on the Bass Hunter saga, I worked in a nightclub in the Midlands around 2012-2013 when Bass Hunter began his string in Irish nightclubs. We had him booked in for the Tuesday of Rag Week and one of the lads had to go and collect him from the airport. He began drinking in the back of the Jeep. When he arrived at the nightclub, we had to give him 2 bottles of rosé wine and 20 bottles of Corona just for when he was playing, which was just an hour set.
Jesus.
He was plastered. As he was leaving the DJ box, security had to surround him to get him through the club. Not for his safety or to stop people grabbing him, but to literally just hold him up. He was that fucked. To make it even better, he didn't have a gig the following night, so agreed if we paid for his hotel room and gave him all that drink again, he'd do the next night for free. And he did. So we had Bass Hunter for 2 nights of Rag Week and it was carnage. He cost around 8k for the first night and the second just cost a fuckload of drink. That is brilliant.
In fairness,
you paid him 8k for the hour. You know what I mean? He's probably happy. He'd put it down as 2 gigs.
Darren was in touch, said back in the school days around 2014, we got a bus down to Bass Hunter, who was playing in the Palace nightclub Tullamore at the Bridge House Hotel. We were 18 and mostly half scuttered. Anyway, on the dance floor, about an hour before Bass Hunter was due on the decks, one of the boys got into a scrap and we got kicked out. Me and another lad followed him out, us being sound. So the three of us headed on down the street, thinking, what the fuck now? So we went up to the main entrance of the hotel, started chatting to the bouncer. He was having none of it. Next thing, we saw Bass Hunter, the man himself, floating about the lobby. I have no idea how, but we managed to talk our way into the lobby and we met the man himself and we were chatting away to him for about 15 minutes. We got a picture with him and then he was called. He was about to start and he goes, do you want to come with me, guys? So we ended up following him through the hotel in the back way to the nightclub. We felt part of his entourage walking through the hotel and entering the nightclub with him. We ended up back out on the dance floor anyway and had a savage night. I feel like this story has been edited, that this is the PG version. We were part of Bass Hunter's entourage and had a pleasant evening.
Yeah, Where's the rest of that story? That's definitely been edited out. Also, he seems stunned. Like, who else would it be in the hotel lobby but Bass Hunter? We've done hotels before, and it's like people are amazed you're there, and it's like, well, our gig's in an hour, and we have to eat. So, like, you know, we don't have a chef with us in the car who's going to just whip us up a chicken curry there. You have to sit down. And then I love when he says, we walk through the hotel into the decks. We've walked on stage in hotels too, and I tell you, the walk isn't that pleasant. It's like there's a head chef there with around four lads, and you're walking through a kitchen down an alleyway. You have to crawl through a hole in the wall, and then eventually you get out.
You're ready to rock, man.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. On Office Romances, can I just say?
Yes, more Bass Hunter.
We want more Bass Hunter, but also, right, we're willing to widen this gap, not just Bass Hunter. We're going to start a thread here now on the weirdest gigs you've been at and people you've met. That can be personal appearance, it can be gigs, whatever it is. The weirdest ones in the weirdest places.
You've got one there.
So we've got two here, thanks to our manager, who reckoned that that's quite a similar place to the last story. It could possibly be that place. Once had a personal appearance by Wellard the dog. Now, if you're a fan of EastEnders, you'll know who Wellard the dog is.
I don't.
He's one of the characters' dog. He's a German Shepherd.
Oh.
And the personal appearance was by the dog.
A nightclub.
Yes.
An Offaly.
Yeah,
had a personal appearance by a dog from EastEnders.
Yeah, and also a few weeks later, they had none other than Phil Mitchell.
Is he on EastEnders too?
Yeah, and he came out on stage and down 3 pints, and everyone was like, "Way!" And Phil Mitchell got 10 grand for that. So we want to know, what's the weirdest things you've been at and the weirdest places? Let us know. Not just Bass Hunter. We've widened it out now.
But mostly Bass Hunter.
But mostly Bass Hunter. Let's keep this thread going for the next few weeks.
Okay, go on.
Now, Office Romances. Anonymous emailed the pod. I started in a new job many moons ago in an office environment. Jesus Christ. I am after getting the wrong pot of coffee there, I'd say.
Oh, you're buzzing.
Oh, I can't even feel my arm, lad. She's impossible to read. It's impossible to read. The words are dancing around the computer. I started in a new job many moons ago in an office environment. There I was the first few days, all suited and booted, sitting around with my teammates who were training me in and demonstrating the work involved, when all of a sudden I happened to glance up and there I saw her. I was captivated by this lady and her beauty as she was walking towards her desk at the other end of the office. Now, I'm a shy individual and a bit of a chicken shit, so walking up to this girl to chat, even at the Christmas parties or other social nights, after a few drinks, it was never going to happen. I would freeze any time I was near her, so trying to ask her out would be near impossible. But as time went on, I just couldn't shake this girl from my mind. I was also informed by someone else that this girl had a boyfriend anyway, so that idea went straight out the window. Now, I'm positive that during this time, the girl probably didn't even know I existed and never batted an eyelid towards me. Fast forward a couple of years, I had moved teams in the office and my new team worked near her team. Then randomly, one afternoon, as I was joking around with another colleague about whatever madness we usually went on with, I noticed the girl staring at me. I froze when I saw her as Mr. Chicken Shit was back in the room and just went on with my work as my heart rhythm returned to normal. But from that day on, for several weeks, I would catch this girl staring at me and smiling when I looked at her. Mr. Chicken Shit was ecstatic at this because the girl I was hopelessly longing for was actually noticing me now. I also found out that herself and her boyfriend had ended things by this stage. So this was it. This was my chance. She was single, I was single, I was interested, and she seemed interested now. So eventually one day, I plucked up the courage to send her a DM and asked her to go on a date with me. Silence. I said, fuck it, and went to the gym for a couple of hours. And when I returned home, got to my front door, pulled out my house key, my phone connected to the Wi-Fi, and I heard the ping from the message notification. She had responded, but I had been rejected. Oh, shit. Right, I thought. That's not what I was hoping for, but it is what it is. At least now I know and can finally stop wondering what might have been. However, the office environment was changed forever. The awkward dial was turned up to the max. Not only was she not smiling at me anymore, she was now giving me dirty looks whenever she passed by me in the corridor. The same kind of reaction you'd get if someone took a shit in your kettle.
That's a bad reaction.
I've seen that, yeah. I would still...
Oh, whose kettle have you shat in, like?
No, I haven't. I know another lad who had.
Oh, I thought that was just a metaphor.
No, at a house party, he boiled it up as well, the bastard. Yeah, listen, house parties were raw in college. I would still catch her staring at me when she thought I didn't notice, but now she was also completely avoiding me, going through colleagues regarding work tasks when she required my input, instead of just asking me directly. This really bothered me and affected my mental health slightly, but I tried to ignore it and just focus on the job. I know what you're thinking. If she had that sort of reaction afterwards, I must have offended her in some way as well. But no, I had never insulted her or did anything to offend her. All I had done was ask her out, and when she said no, I'd left it at that. No explosive responses to her rejection or anything like that. She said no, I let it be, like the Beatles say. As time went on, things didn't improve, and the office environment between myself, herself and her teammates felt very awkward, hostile and raw at times. So finally, I decided that I had enough, and as Biff Tannen would say, I made like a tree and scrammed. Who's Biff Tannen?
Is that your man in Back to the Future?
Don't know, Neil, got on the Google. I left the company altogether. Jesus, this is taking a drastic turn. I was not going to continue to work in a job for potentially another 40 plus years with this hostility surrounding me. I realised that I took the wrong approach and rushed into asking her out instead of taking my time and really get to know her first. I also realised, looking back now, that she probably only seemed interested because she'd recently broken up with her boyfriend and I was a distraction. Anyway, lads, I am forever scarred by this whole situation, and it has really implanted the old workplace motto, don't shit where you eat. So I will never be second glancing any ladies in work environments in the future. I must note that this office has created many marriages over the last 20 years, so it can definitely work out. But just like with sports and everything else, it's just not for everyone. But since then, I got myself on Tinder, and I'm now happily in a relationship with a fantastic lady who I love dearly, and I am also in a completely different job with no more issues. Take caution, people of Two Johnny's World, this lad says. If contemplating approaching your workplace crush, because once that door is opened, it cannot be shut, he says. Up tip uprighting from Mr. Chicken Shit.
Why did he DM her?
Yeah, why didn't you just...
get the old chat.
Yeah, give her the handy chat. Handy talk.
Handy talk.
Yeah.
But still, she probably reacted a bit strong.
Yeah, a bit much now, ignoring him and stuff like that. It's easier to say it on a DM, lad. You know what I mean?
Ah, come on.
Yeah, he should have just...
Come on.
Come on, Mr. Chicken Shit.
Anonymous said, just in relation to Maura's mystery topic on dating your co-workers, I worked with this guy in my office closely on a few projects and we became pretty good.
This is like, I feel like we're just setting the scene for a porno.
I, of course, liked him more than that and wanted to take things further. But keeping in mind, we both worked in a pretty small office, so I wanted to do things properly. I didn't want to just get him drunk at the Christmas party. I flirted away and bided my time until he asked me out on a proper date. When he eventually got the hint, we went for dinner to a pretty nice restaurant in Dublin. I was so nervous and eager to impress. The menus in the restaurant were on fancy clipboards and a sheet of plastic on them. Plastic. I flipped it over and was intently reading the menu when I smelled something burning. I looked up to find I had flipped the first page of the menu and the plastic into the candle in the middle of the table, and the whole thing had caught fire. I panicked and tried to put out the flame by waving it down by the floor. That only made matters worse when the flame caught onto the tablecloth and started to burn that as well. I quickly threw my glass of water onto the tablecloth, soaking myself in the process, but the menu was still all right. My date sat there oblivious, so I had to call him for his help as people around were now commenting on the smell of burning coming from summer. I was absolutely mortified when he looked up at me, soaking wet with a charred tablecloth and menu still burning away. Fire eventually was put out. The waiters weren't too impressed, although my date thought the whole thing was hilarious. Despite its rocky start, the date went well, and I was looking forward to seeing him at work on Monday. I arrived into the office on Monday morning, only to have my boss greet me singing, "Come on, baby, light my fire." My co-worker had told the whole office about my accidental arson over our morning coffees. Still haven't lived it down and have been sent on all the office fire safety talks since, but myself and my co-worker are still together. Ah. Must have been some spark.
I like it.
Can I say, she let him away with that now?
Yeah.
A lot of people would not have liked going into the office talking about the first date. You wait until you're properly going out before you be...
Yeah, I'd be telling that story at like the engagement party. Yeah. Or you know, you'd be holding that off for a wedding story. Well, the first time I met Janet, you know, she set the restaurant on fire. She set fire to my heart that moment. There you go.
She seems like a cracking person.
You can have that one for free.
Have that one, yeah.
On nightclubs, Anonymous was in touch. Says, well, John's and Maureen, listening to your podcast about the dodgy discos and nightclubs around Ireland back in the day. Here's one for you buckos. Many moons ago, there was an owl shindig myself and a few fellas used to go to. We weren't quite of the age yet, but with an owl fake IDs in the arse pocket, we headed for Aldi for a 3-litre bottle of Linden Village. Piss in a bottle. But it.
I won't have a bad word said against Linden Village here, okay?
Piss in a bottle, but it was cheap and it did the trick. Eventually, we all made it into No Name, as it was called. Great crack. After some time, a blonde bombshell with 9-inch heels pulled me to one side.
Wow.
Jackpot. The shifting started, and before long, she had dropped a hand. Now, bear in mind that this was a big hall with chairs all around, so absolutely no privacy. She started choking the chicken. After a while, I squinted out one eye, and to my shock, there was a semicircle of people all looking at this. Bouncers, the lads, the lot. Everyone was afraid to get spunked on. Cue explosion. After her hand was covered in jungle juice, me with a smile from ear to ear, I asked, where are you going to wipe that? Romantically, she looked at me and smiled, walked onto the dance floor and hugged some little chap, wiping it all on his back. Some weapon she was. Eventually, I got kicked out for it. Still laugh about it to this day. But if that chap with the jippy back is listening, give him the mug. It's the least I can do. From Fionn McCool and the boys from the Hill of Allen. Good luck.
She's
a dangerous bitch.
He realised that there was people looking at him.
And he went through with it.
He just kept going.
He
closed his eyes again.
It must have been like that scene, The Inbetweeners, you know, where Joanna's like, fucking, oh, you're so horny, tongue me. And she's like, she's giving him a hand shandy. Did you ever see that in The Inbetweeners? You know the one I'm on about, Mara?
Yeah, it's the episode where they go to the caravan park.
Yeah, no, or is it the teenage disco?
Yeah, the teenage disco is at the caravan park. Yeah, I think,
Okay.
Someone's going to get left.
Well, Niall was in touch with one for you, Johnny Smacks. He was listening to an older episode where you spoke about your love for probably one of your all-time favourite soccer players, Robbie Fowler. And he said his dad actually used to teach Robbie Fowler in secondary school in England.
Wow.
And he said there was no mad stories about him, even though Robbie was from Toxteth, a notoriously rough area of Liverpool, mainly due to him needing to keep the head down if he wanted to make anything of himself in soccer. He did mention that Fowler first gained attention after scoring 18 goals in an under-10s game for his club. Once he started to get noticed by Liverpool, the club used to ring up the school every week to see how he was getting on and not getting into any trouble. Dad always said he had to tell the parents of all the kids in the class that their child could play for Liverpool if they worked hard enough and kept their heads down just to keep them happy. The school was in a rough enough area, so it was all some lads would have hoped for. But in Fowler's case, he was actually telling the truth. He also said Fowler used to go to Liverpool trials in all Everton gear until he was strongly advised not to. And then around the year 2000, there was some charity event in the west of Ireland where Fowler and a few other soccer lads were involved. Dad happened to be around the hotel at the time and saw Fowler getting out of his car, shouted over to him, and Robbie Fowler couldn't believe he met his old teacher. All right, sir. Chatted away for about 15 minutes. Class act. Up tip. Up Robbie Fowler, says Niall.
Ah, that's class.
Good to hear.
Good to hear. He was nice. He lived up to it.
Talk.
Yeah, there you go. Touch of class.
Talk.
There you go. GA Max said, how are you gents? Regular listener from Poland here.
On Poland.
I've been living in Ireland since I can remember, playing GA for the local club since my early teens. I did play county for years underage, Max, he says here as well. Just wanted to let you know that not all of us wear white and keep our money with us at all times. That's in reference to
that was the rumor
going around Ross Gray about foreign nationals.
Just because they had backpacks.
Yeah. Some of us sing creamy pints, chase after women, but most importantly, some of us kick some lovely scores for our local GA teams too. It's great to see people from different countries trying to get involved in the GA, as it is really inclusive, no matter the ability, age or ethnicity. It's very common for foreign people to appear to separate themselves from the community, and the GA is a great way of trying to fit in and getting to know the locals and having the crack at the same time. Growing up, I did get a lot of abuse, people calling you a Polish wanker, telling you to go sweep the floors or clean the dishes, both on the pitch and on the sidelines. But you learn to ignore it, especially when your teammates and the supporters would go to war for you if they ever heard someone saying it. Just to mention, this carry-on has definitely decreased over the last couple of years, which is also great to see. I'm really grateful I was introduced to the GA at 30. I'm 25 now and I'm still playing, and would encourage anyone, old, young, foreign, local, gifted shite, to go down to the local club, give it a go after thinking about it. And that's from Max, the Polish hammer he signs off as.
Yes.
Love that. That's a great story. I really enjoyed that.
Max, can you tell us what county team did you play for? Because as far as I know, you must be one of the first Polish guys to play county.
There's probably a few, it's At this stage.
Let us know.
Yeah, we want to know. That's it. There we go. More info needed.
Can I just clarify my in-betweeners remark? You're right, it was a school disco. I'm going to get abused on this for now. So there was two discos that I can think of happening. One was at a caravan park, and then there's one from the work experience episode.
Yes,
and yeah, that's
yes.
the one where Simon gets wanked off. So
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Chicken. Just had to clarify that.
Chicken yes. in between bread, okay? Hashtag save our chicken rolls. The campaign that keeps on giving. Well, we have an anonymous emailer saying, from Sligo myself, a few years ago, I started college in UCD above in Dublin. It was a well-known tradition around the college that the centre at the top of the campus was the place to be at lunchtime. From the hours of 12 a.m. until 8 p.m. at night, without fail, there was always someone there to get you a chicken roll. And it's easy to understand why. When I was in college, if you were broke, hungover, stumbling back from some lucky lady's apartment from the night before,
you lady killer,
you could always get a roll. Unbelievably, €1.95.
Wow.
Yes, €1.95. I have not made a typo. If you wanted toppings, that would also set you back to the price of €2.95.
That is good value.
They were fresh rolls, freshest in the country, he reckons, because of the demand. Like a good pull on a porter, I suppose.
Yeah.
If you're ever up that part of the country, you have my word. I'll leave a tab for behind the counter for you. Yourselves and Maura to go treat yourselves to a roll. Keep up the good work. Someone has to fight our corner for chicken rolls.
You'll see us just hanging around college campuses now for cheap chicken rolls. Lee also emailed, Johnny's absolutely loved the podcast and the TV show was class, but I would like to tell you about how bad the chicken roll situation has got in Waterford.
Oh, no.
Myself and one of the lads went to the deli in Ardkeen Stores and we saw a load of juicy chicken fillets raring to go. Get in me roll, buzzing. So I said to your one behind the counter, can I get a large chicken fillet roll with mayonnaise and cheese, please? She turns around and says, we can't make up the rolls, but I can give you the roll, put butter and mayo on it. Then I can give you the chicken fillets separately. And I also can't put the cheese in the roll, so I'll have to give you a tub of cheese.
I hear.
We looked at each other in a confused state, but said, go on, sure. She was able to cut the roll, put the butter and mayonnaise on the roll, but couldn't put the cheese or chicken into it. So she hands me a bag with the roll in it, with just the mayo and butter in, hands me a tub of cheese and another bag with the chicken fillet in it. To my horror, when I got to the cashier, as the item scanned, the bag with just the chicken fillet in it was €3.90.
Whoa!
The baguette with butter and mayo was 95 cent and the tub of cheese was €2.
Oh,
it cost me €6.85 and I had to sit in the car and try and put the roll together. Let's just say it was a shit show. And to pay €6.85 for me to have to make the roll, it just makes it even worse. Lads, I don't know about you, but I am distraught over this. Hashtag save our chicken rolls before it's too late. Up the dacha. There's only one word we have for that.
Outrageous! I wonder is that like that's the HSE license they have, that they can like
There's no HSE license that says you can't put chicken in a roll. And if there is, we will fight them.
I don't know. I'm just trying to wonder, is there some reason that
if Ardkeen Stores want to get in touch with us personally and give a reply to this,
because
we're ready. And I tell you, we're vexed. And you don't want to see the two Johnnies when we're vexed. A vein has emerged in my arm now. Just from pure stress after reading that.
Well, wait till you see the photograph Anto has sent in. I tweeted yesterday because at Barack Obama Plaza, is it in tip? Are we giving it back? Or is it in Offaly?
Do you know what? I would have said it was in tip. And after seeing this price, Offaly can fucking have it.
$5.95 for a chicken roll.
Outrageous!
I tweeted at Barack Obama himself to let him know that they are taking his name in vain.
You tagged the Plaza as well, did you?
No, I couldn't find them on Twitter. I just tagged Barack Obama himself.
There you go, Barack Obama Plaza.
Get in touch.
Moneygall, County Tipperary /Offaly, whatever way you want to sort it there.
Get in touch.
Follow this up. €5.95 is not an acceptable price. €4 is an acceptable price. Who's going to get the Two Johnnies podcast mug this week? Sponsored by KC Sports, who carry all the lovely Two Johnnies merchandise. You can see kcsports.ie. And the brand new Samba soccer jersey is now available there. All proceeds to Crumlin's Children's Hospital. It's a great cause. Go on and get yourself a Samba soccer jersey. You know you want it. Right, the mug.
Maura, who do you fancy for the mug?
I like Max the Polish Hammer because I think that's just the best nickname ever. I also like your man who got wanked off in No Name.
I like your one who set fire to the table as well.
Oh, that's very good.
I,
Yeah.
I'm leaning a little bit towards Max.
Go on, yeah.
That nickname alone, Max the Polish Hammer. I'd say, Max, you want to mind that Polish hammer of yours. You've got a mug now, so you can relax yourself and drink a bit of tea. So, Max,
the Polish hammer.
Email podcast at thetwojohnnies.ie with all your contact details, and Maura will have a look at your Polish hammer, and she'll also get a mug out you in the next couple of weeks. Kid, a weekly roundup. What's been going on this week in Two Johnny's land? Care has been a hub of activity this week. We can't not address it on the podcast.
Yes, they are filming a blockbuster movie in Care. Ridley Scott, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
I can't. Jodie Comer.
Adam Driver.
Yeah.
He's got a really distinctive face.
Mm.
Is he American? Yeah, he's like the American Barry Keoghan.
Okay.
You'd know him a while away.
I know the lad you're on about. Yeah,
yeah, so you know straight away. Yeah, yeah. So Matt Damon, we put it in call, obviously wanted to get in touch with the lads, have him on for a chat. The whole set is locked down tight because of coronavirus.
Yeah.
But he was spotted in a pub in Tibtown. This is what I've been told.
I heard that as well, lad. Listen.
Who, Johnny?
Yeah, no, Johnny, you listen.
He could have been preparing for his role as a medieval warrior.
By going for a pint in Tibtown. Yeah, that's pretty apt.
He probably got into a knife fight as well. Just
stop.
For the hell of it.
So,
yeah, well, that's it. We couldn't get him.
No, we couldn't get him. And it was mad. I found it a bit strange that I drove through town the other day. And, like, there was just loads of people outside the castle just whooping and cheering. It's just mad, like, isn't it? I suppose people are excited to see a film star and stuff.
I know, but also, like, people queued for hours.
Yeah, just, and, like...
Get a glimpse.
Yeah, just get a glimpse. Yeah, it's gas. I was like, are any of you not working? You know what I mean? It's like 12 o'clock on a Wednesday. Anyway, it was great, and it's great for the town, and it's giving Care loads of great kudos. The one thing that is bugging us is, though, when we done our show in LA, we went for drinks with a fella, Dublin man. And he DM'd us and was like, I'll be in Care in a few weeks. I'll call into you. And we meant to reply and we forgot. And now he's actually involved in the film. And I just seen a photo in the paper and was like, that's your man from the night out in LA. And he was a legend. He was gas cracked.
And now we can't find your message.
We met him twice.
Yeah, he's great crack.
Yeah. And
you know who you are.
Contact us. What else has been going on this week?
Look, we have a book coming out, John. That's the big news.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that I cleaned the chimney, but I suppose book is probably...
No. Tell us about the chimney.
Man, in the words of your man from Game of Thrones, I've never watched it, but winter's coming. I don't know if you know this.
I'm aware.
There's something inside of me, lad, an old bit of melancholy inside me that just loves misery. Particularly... It was freezing the other night and I heard someone say, Jesus, it's getting fair cold. I was like, lovely. There's nothing I love more than this time of year.
Why?
When it starts to get dark in the evenings and the fire's lighting and you're sitting at home and you've fucking nothing to be doing, only watching the telly and just lighting the fire. So I went about cleaning it. I rang four different chimney cleaners. I was like, well, I'm not getting up, you know, cleaning my chimney. Yeah. Like, you know, get someone in to do that. They're all so busy. I rang one fella and he said, I have four vans on the road. I won't get you for 3 weeks. I said, I need to light the fire, man. 3 weeks, well, I'll be freezing by then. So with the help of Annie's mother, we cleaned the chimney. We went into the co-op. We bought plastic, put it all over. And now I have to be honest, Annie sent a photo to a lot of people and it was her mother down on her hands and knees cleaning the chimney. But I was there. I watched. I done me best.
You're a disgrace.
I hoovered up after it, but the main thing is the fire's lighting, winter's coming, and I'll be warm this winter.
I never saw it like it, Maura. He cling filmed the entire fireplace.
It wasn't cling film, it was plastic.
The cling film.
No, it was special plastic.
It was like you had a bit of leftover mince or something. He cling film. He tightly wrapped the entire thing.
I didn't know how dusty it'd be. I had rugs on everything, lad.
It's pretty dusty.
Yeah, it does get dusty now. I hoovered it up then.
You'd normally be a good man with your rod.
Yeah, I was, when it comes to the rod, and I'm your man. But I just thought I'd throw that in this week. You know, that's the kind of madness we get up to down here in Care. Anyway, the book. Tell them about the book.
We have
Jesus, buy it. I saw that I can pay someone to clean my chimney, will you?
We have a great book coming out. Our second book. It's called Come Here and I Tell You. You can go on to thetwojohnnies.ie now and you can pre-order it. That gets you into a little competition. We'll tell you more about that next week. But it's a great book and it's our best work. We put our heart and soul into it.
Yeah, we put it together during lockdown and it was actually like therapy. Just lying down on the couch, man. I was just screaming stuff. Teenage discos. But
like you had the shakes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's somewhere between like our take on the world and just stories of us growing up. Personal stories and stuff like that, and we're dead proud of it. We think it's class. So the actual blurb of it is gas as well. Just nearly a whole chapter about me wearing a cravat to the dibs, which was a harrowing experience. I won't give it away.
More on that next week. And also, thank you to everyone who has signed up to the Extra podcast out on Thursdays. Extra crack stories, mayhem. This week was the heated debate of Culchies versus Townies, where Maura was a little bit mean to Smacks.
I'm going to have to be retort there before we play this clip. I tell you, Maura, there's a woman out, she's looking for you. There's a care woman looking for you. I had to sleep in the shed over this.
Okay, Annie plays football. Who is her best looking teammate?
Oh, fuck's sake, you're joking. I'm not saying that. I can't.
Go on.
I don't know. I honestly don't know off the top of my head.
No, who do you think would, you know, be considered very good looking? Like, not in a, just in a, I approve way. You know, fair play to you. Put effort into your appearance. Go on. You have to name it. This is 30 seconds of truth.
They're all lovely girls.
No, name. You can name two or three names. I'll take that.
They're all lovely girls. Our next guest has always been Marmite. When he was picked for the Lions, Irish rugby legend Rory Best said, "Oh, for God's sake, why him?" Since then, however, he now counts Rory as a friend along with Johnny Sexton and Sean O'Brien. Please welcome to the Two Johnnies podcast one of rugby's biggest characters, James Haskell.
We're delighted to have you on because you seem like a man after our own hearts in that the importance of team bonding and socialising. You're a man, I believe you have strong views on this. Is this right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think... I'm not, you know, look, I said on my book, you know, there's three things you can't trust. Never trust a person that doesn't drink. Never trust a person who showers with their pants on. and never trust a person who doesn't shower in team socials. If you do all three of them, then you really are persona non grata. I think that, you know, the drinking thing, for me, you can take it or leave it. It's not a problem. It's just the fact that you should turn up. You know, I had a teammate at Northampton who's fat, I won't mention his name, but he's famous for it. Just, you know, we talk about an hour before every team says, "Oh, my wife's got a terrible migraine," or "She's got kids." It's like, maybe it was like laughable. And all he had to do was turn up for 1 hour, just show his face, didn't have to drink. But people like that never get it. And because they don't get it, they just always sit outside the group. And I would never like force young players to drink. For years I didn't drink, but I'd still turn up to the socials. For me, it's really important, that aspect of it.
Because it was a thing, you were saying, like, back in the day, if somebody didn't drink, like, their teammates would hit them, and it was like, you better fucking drink, like.
There was a famous kind of story with a guy called Tom Rees, who's actually now a doctor. Unfortunately, he retired injured. And basically, we turn up to a team social, and we just won the Heineken Cup and won the Premiership. And this kid was sitting in the corner nursing like a Diet Coke. And one of the Phil Greening comes. The problem is that these old fellas, like, you've got to remember, like, when you're married and when you're with kids and stuff like that, like, this is a highlight of your life, going on a team social, right? This is like, you know, this is your one moment to shine. So you've got like a lot of like caged or pent up aggression. And as Phil Greening spotted Tom Rees and gone, there's a bit of a side story to it. So I told everyone bored one day that Tom Rees had gone on that TV show Robot Wars. You know, they used to build the robots. Like, yeah. So I was sitting down one day, like sitting down. You know that? You know, there's that meme of Kermit the Frog, and he's like eating there. It's like none of my business. It was like lads are sitting around. I've just gone, you know Reesey, and they're like, yeah. I was like, he built a robot with his dad and went on Robot Wars, right? And I just put it out there, and the lads were like, fuck off. No way. And I was like, yeah. Now he did. I think I think he called it Thunder Doom or something like that. Right. So then he was known as Respot. They were like Respot, Resnores, you know, Robot Nores. Well, all the variations of these things, right? So anyway, Phil Greening's seen him in the pub and he's gone. He's gone, oi, Robot Nores. What the fuck are you aren't drinking? And it's a bit like that scene, you know, like a bit like that scene from like. you know, old school, where he like picks up the pipe. He's like whole shaking. He's like, oh, well, no. See, the thing is I would be drinking, but I don't normally drink. And I've got England train tomorrow. And I, you know, and the thing is that I've got a really big day tomorrow. And I probably, I'm not sure. Yeah. I can, right. It goes on and on. And guys like, Reese, you fuck, what are you talking about? And everyone's just gone, hit him till he drinks. And people just come over and just started like body shotting him. Not like in the face, like body shotting him. Trevor Leota, the, you know, the world famous Samoan. You know, he's come over, you know, threatening to break a chair on his head. And then Reese is like, he's like, ah, ah. You know, he's got, someone's given him a pint of like Carling. He's like, ah, and he's just had a sip. And then fast forward kind of 6 hours later, he's like spewing in the urinal, like completely melted. And then he went to England on the 21 train the next day. And I basically ended up going around all night, waking up in some girl's front living room, passed out in a chair, and then basically ended up going back to my parents' house, passing out on the lawn. So, but Reese had to go to England training. The last thing I saw him was he was spewing in a urinal, and he's like, "I'm never drinking again," right? And then he basically went to England training and fucking brought the house down. Was like the best trainer he's ever trained. Like boys were like, "Oh my god!" Like he was on form, and then. He basically drunk ever since from then on. And it turns out it really agreed with him. And then ultimately he became a doctor. And you know what those medical students are like. So I'm not going to say that Phil Greeny and thing sort of created a monster, but they certainly did.
The name of your book, James, what a flanker. Obviously, and the FL is replaced in by what I'm assuming would have been something else. You do divide opinion, but I think you're almost... Like, we love it in that you just say what you think. You don't really give a shit about what anyone else thinks. Is that why people love you?
Well, look, I don't know if people do love me. I think it's one of those things where I've always divided opinion, you know. So I'm envious, and I talk about this a bit in the book. I'm envious of other players and other people who toe the party line, very calm, very quiet. You know, all through my career when I was sort of, you know, getting newspaper headlines or having a bit of controversy or, you know, but then... You know, doing some of the fun, crazy stuff that I've done, I'd kind of look at them and go, do you reckon my life would be a lot easier if I'd been like that? And I tried to do it. I tried to be that person and quiet and humble and everything else. And basically, people thought I was ill or was like, had depression. genuine. I like tried it. I was like, when I was with Stuart Lancaster with England, I tried to like fulfill this role of kind of a quieter, more studious person. People would come up to me and be like, you're right, Haskett, everything all right at home? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine, I'm just being quiet. And it would like unnerve people. So I knew I had to be true to myself. And the interesting thing that I find about myself is we get it all the time on our podcast, the good, the bad, the rugby. Every player comes on. We had Johnny Sexton on last night. They all say, before I met James Haskell, I thought he was a prick. I thought I was going to punch him in the face. I didn't think I was going to like him. And then unanimously, bizarrely, because I am a bit of a prick, they all turn out and say, you know, really, really got on with him, you know, good team man, hardworking, lovely. And that's kind of what's important to me. And all through my, even on my I'm a Celebrity, you know, when the public was slamming me, when the editors had fucked me, my campmates had basically, you know, they all turned around and said and cried and said, oh, we don't want him to leave and everything else. That showed my character. Every team... I've had the same thing. So while the public very much think I am probably a bit of a wanker and don't like me, most people kind of warm to me, and that's what's important. Because I think if you try to please everyone, you're fucked. If you try to be sort of genuine and just be yourself, and your teammates and like coaches like you, that's what's important.
Is there much trash talking on the field?
No, look, there's a few. You've got to be pretty good. You've got to be a pretty outstanding player to do that. I mean, Johnny. It was interesting. I obviously know all about Johnny Sexton, you know. And Ireland were always a very difficult team for me. They were probably the hardest team to play against. They ruined 3 Grand Slams, I think, for me.
Butter.
And you go to the Aviva, you know, and the anthem comes out, and then they send that small wizard out who puts a spell on everybody, you know, and he.
It's the president, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the president, right? Oops, right. I didn't know that. I thought it was. He comes out, he puts a spell on you all. Then it starts raining, and then we lose. That's how I thought it was, like how it went. And the best bit is that all the Irish fans before the game, they're like, "Oh, come on, Jack, come on, fellas. Don't beat us by too much. Don't beat us by too much. Oh, yeah, go easy on us, hey?" And all this kind of stuff, all this ruffling. And as soon as the start of the game goes, they're like, "Fuck you, English, fucking..." Like, everyone goes fucking mental. Okay, and it was always on like St. Patrick's Day, and we'd always lose. And Johnny Sexton in this game he's always very abrasive. He's the ultimate competitor. He's kind of sort of really intense. Like really cares about what he's doing. So he ran over. And was like, "Ah, fucking Haskell!" And I was like, "Poh! Are you right?" Like looking at Johnny Sexton, because obviously he's not blessed with like the best rig in the world. Do you know what I mean? He's like, you know, he's like incredible talent, lovely guy, like world class player. Rig management probably not the best, you know.
Not the biggest, no.
Not the biggest. So he's come running in, and obviously I was a bit fired up because I didn't think it was a penalty. So I've gone, "Fuck off, Sexton, you shit cunt." And Nigel Owens has gone. He's gone, "Come here." He's like, "James, I'm not being funny, right? I'm not being funny, but you can't have language like that. You can't have language like that. There's women and children watching. There's mother and children watching." I said, "Well, Nigel, my mum actually taught me that word." "Oh, don't, James, you're talking shit. Walk off, right?" So then I got on the line, so I thought, look, you know, Dan Bigger, Johnny Sexton, I'm never going to get on with these guys. They're like competitors. They're like straight shooters. They're going to find me, you know, my sense of humour, you know, me DJing, all this kind of stuff. They're just going to roll their eyes at it. But actually, Johnny and I and Dan Bigger, we got on like a house on fire. We had a couple of coffees. He was like, "Did you call me a shit gun again?" I was like, "Yeah." Now that's his nickname for me. So every week, without fail, I'll get an Instagram like notification, like DM from Johnny Sexton. He's like, "All right, shit gun, how are you?" So
good to hear.
Can we ask you about that Lions tour? One of the abiding memories we have of it here is you were rooming with Sean O'Brien, and he was teaching you some Irish songs. So like Richie Kavanagh. And yes. I can't imagine Richie Kavanagh is your style. How did you find that?
Well, look, first of all, Sean O'Brien is obviously a bit of a hit up here of Ireland. You know, he came on the Good, the Bad, the Rugby, and, you know, talked about, you know, the reason he was so good at what he was doing was him chasing sheep and picking them up, loading them in a van, and that, you know, his whole career almost ended when he jackknifed the tractor trying to reverse it up a hill because all the brakes went and the whole thing tipped over the side, and that he spent his first paycheck on a Massey Ferguson, and that he's, you know, that that was the highlight of his career. But you know, Sean was great because Sean and I had obviously always been in competition. You know, he obviously supremely won that competition, always, you know, kind of the better player. And he, you know, I always looked up to him, but I kind of wanted him to be the Irish James Haskell, if you know what I mean. Like, I wanted him to be, because I thought, you know, big guy, unit, blah, 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 you know, he's going to be quite funny. And I'd had a couple of beers with him after the game, and I could see him just sort of sizing me up again, you know, sort of almost relaxing. But then we got put into a room together. And we sort of become, you know, great mates. And he was, you know, he, problem is though, he spent a lot of time with his shirt off, a lot of time trying to shit with the door open, which is an interesting approach to sort of team bonding. And my wonderful wife, would send me these sort of gift box bags of, like, you know, she sent me a bottle of Johnny Walker whiskey, which I really like, and some, you know, some Ferrero Rocher, very posh middle class English, obviously, and loads of things. And I come back to room, and old Dick Fingers had opened the bag and eaten all the fucking chocolates. And I'd be like, he was sitting there on his bed, like, you know, probably on his phone chatting to birds or whatever. And he was like, I'd look up and I'd be like, "Sean, what are you doing?" And I'd be like, "You've eaten all the chocolate." He'd be like, "Room treats, Hask, room treats." I was like, "Sorry, there's no such thing as room treats." "Ah, Hask, will you relax? Room treats, room treats. Will you just feck off?" And I was like, "All right, I'm sorry. And that was the upshot of it.
Another man involved on the Lions tour asked us to ask you about fire pussy.
has this made the book?
This has made the book. The mystery is solved. I won't explain too much. All I'll say is, to understand fire pussy, it came from 2011 when I was in Dunedin with England in the World Cup, which went really well. That's sort of covered in the book. And we went, there's a very interesting student area of Dunedin where they basically live in sort of squalor. You know, like, you go, there's like a door, instead of a door, there's like a wall, like a hole in the wall, and they all sleep, you know. We went to some bloke's house, and there was, the outhouse was like a death trap. There was like one single bulb, a pile of, you know, a toilet paper, there's rats, it was a nightmare. And in the living room, there was like a table, like a bizarrely like a coffee table, and part of the coffee table was burnt, part of the wall was burnt, part of the sofa was burnt, and there was a fire damage up the wall. And I went, said to these lads, "What the fuck is that?" And they went, "Oh, it's fire pussy." And I was like, I think you could probably go to the doctor to get. I thought it was like something that you catch if you knocked in a dirty bird. I thought that you get fire pussy. And they went, no. Fire pussy is basically where you light a fire in the house, and the first person to put it out is the fire pussy, and basically he has to do all the chores for the week. So that obviously was a light bulb moment in my childish mind, clocked in 2011. And let's put it this way, there may have been a round of fire pussy in Auckland, which could have gone horribly wrong, but ultimately, you know, we survived.
Hey, we won't get into it here, but the fellow who told us about it said you had a fantastic way of cleaning up afterwards.
Yeah, we did. Let's just put it this way. If anyone ever moves a sofa or anything else in the hotel we're staying at, there's going to be a few questions to be had.
You seem to get on great with all the Irish lads you played with, but we're wondering, so obviously Ireland and England have kind of a strange relationship as nations, like, and especially when England come to play Ireland in Dublin, a lot of the fans, well, the fair weather fans definitely would think if we lose every game, everything's okay as long as we beat England. Like, are English people, are the players aware of this opinion?
Yes, I think everybody knows everybody hates England in English. You know, I'm actually envious of kind of Scotland, Ireland and Wales because of how nationalistic you can be, how much pride you can be, how, you know, we go over there and play in Dublin and everyone's wearing green, there's a sea of green, you know, everyone's on the Guinness, everyone's on the, you know, Paddy's Day, and it's very hostile. You know, you sort of come to Twickenham and the most you'll get is maybe get a prawn sandwich in the eye, potentially, if you're lucky, you know. And like, I think, you know, Irish, you know, the Irish fans or the Welsh fans, like, fuck you, England. You know, you might get a sort of an old English gentleman in a barber going, ooh, I'm going to get ruddy perturbed in a minute. And you're like, oh, God, don't, whatever, you know, if he gets angry, we really are in trouble. And so I'm kind of quite jealous of that mindset. But I think you've got to be aware that, you know, England for, you know, however many it was, 400 years, 600 years of empire building, you know, we went around the world and sort of conquered most of it, ran most of it, and basically upset everyone. So
that's one way of putting it.
We basically fucked everyone off around the whole world. So now we have to sit there, and the problem is that, you know, if you start waving a St. George's flag and sort of having that kind of pride, you're immediately part of the EDL or the BNP. You know, you sort of like, well, you really hate immigration and, you know, you sort of quite angry. And that's not what you can do. So I'm kind of quite jealous that you guys own that. But we're fully aware of that. You know, we've gone to Wales and they've, you know, they've lost to everybody. But if they beat England, it's all that matters, really. And it's quite hard because I don't, you know, I've never hated anyone. You know, the team that I disliked playing the most was the Irish because it was always such a hard encounter. You know, every time it was away, you would think, oh, for fuck's sake, you know, going to go to Aviva, you know, it's bound to rain. You know, it's a tough place to go and play. And, you know, I never hated anyone. I just didn't want to lose to people. But I can certainly, you certainly feel that passion, you know, and especially, yeah. I remember when Scotland beat us, I was in the stand, luckily, but Scotland beat us in like two Six Nations ago or whatever, up there. And mate, I'm standing in a bar after the game and like, you can feel fans, they like hover. They're like hovering idle, and it's like, you're like, oh fuck, you know, there's no, and they get into view, and then they come in, and like this little dude, little Scottish guy, and he's like, oh, good game, wasn't it? And I was like, and he's like, oh, well, you know, see, the thing is that, you know, we've needed that for a long time. And then boom, you're into a conversation about how good Scotland are, and they're like, oh, we're such a small place with like, you know, less people that play it, and it goes on and on, yeah. And how good, and you're like, yeah. I just turn around and say, look, mate, Scotland were better on the day. You won. Please, I don't. I was nothing to do with it. I was in the stand. I don't care. Can we just move it? But everyone's desperate to tell you. And they sort of corner you about it, which is a little bit painful.
Man, there's so many great stories in the book. We were going through them and stuff. Just one of the ones we want to ask you about is you lost a sponsorship with Land Rover. Like, this is kind of a hot topic at the moment here in Ireland anyway, because people are saying, oh, if you speak your mind, you lose all sponsorships and stuff like that. It's a bit of a story in the news. Obviously Jedward are actually saying it here, which is fucking outrageous.
If Jedward are saying it, then that's it, you've lost the battle. If they're like your first line of defence, I can imagine, like, you know, in the White House there's like a red phone. Who are you going to call? Fucking Jedward. We need we need, have you still got that shit, lads, you still got that shit hair? Yeah, okay, boom, phone down. Like, I'm not sure anyone gives a shit what Jed would have got to say, because I'm not sure they're on the cutting edge of, like, leading politics. But if they're saying what their point is very true. That, to be honest with you, if you speak your mind, you have an opinion, you're shit out of luck. And I think it's hard, because 2020 is the year of, obviously, meltdowns and sort of righting wrongs. And I think for a long time, things with racism and things with inequality with women, all this stuff's been going on that needs to be corrected. But we've also got ourselves into a situation where everybody's, like, default position is, I'm offended, change my mind.
Yeah.
And what I don't get is, you know, and why big brands panic, is if you post a post on Instagram and say you get 1,000 comments and 900 are like, yeah, you know, this is the best thing ever. And you've got sort of 150 people going, oh, I didn't like it. Oh, what, you know, how, I mean, I posted something about some dinner the other day, some steak, and they went, wow, I can't believe you're condoning animal rape. And I was like,
ah, fuck me.
Mate, I was like, where? I said, hold on a minute. I can understand that, you know, but I can understand the killing, but who's going around fucking them before they're killing them? Because that is really out of order. And he was like, and the bloke got all confused, and what he meant was forced insemination of cows for all. And I was like, that's what I mean. Everyone gets upset. Now, I don't give a shit about that. I'm not worried about offending people because I'm doing what I'm doing. Do I go out of my way to offend people? No. Do I think you have to respect people's opinion? Yes. But social media, we've lost track of everything. We've lost track of the fact that I can say something, you can not like it, and we can still get on with our lives. We can have difference of opinion. But there's no normal dialogue anymore. And I think that big brands, just they see one negative comment, they're like, oh, take the post down. Oh, you've offended people. I'm like, no, everybody's offended. Like, I'm sure people listening to this podcast are going to be like, oh, he's sworn, he said the C word, he looks like an Arab and English bloke, blah, blah, blah. You know, he talks too fast, he fucking looks like an albino, whatever. Like, they're going to say whatever they're going to say. And the point is that, do I apologise for any of it? Fuck no.
But the thing, yeah, that got you lost the Land Rover deal, I have to read this quote here. You said, you did a Valentine's Day interview. She spoke about your sex life. She was wearing a latex dress. I was in leather trousers. And they used her quote about sex every day as the headline. Obviously, we want to ask, why were you wearing leather trousers? That's
so basic. Well, because they were just my normal Tuesday night trousers, lads. If it had been a Thursday, it would have been a leather skirt. But that's another story for another day. It's 2020. Anything goes.
Yeah.
No, so basically what was... What happened was that Fabulous magazine is an insert that goes into the Sun, and my wife had been on the front cover like 3 or 4 times, and it was a Valentine's Day special one, and they wanted to do something a little bit raunchy, so it was kindly basically like a cage background. I was obviously rig out oil to an inch of my life, and they were like, you know, they said, do you want to put some leather trousers on? I actually brought my own. And they was like, oh, that's a coincidence. But weird enough, mine had the arse cut out of it, and they said even that was too professional. So they said, do you want to wear leather trousers? I said, yeah, look, that's fine. And basically the whole thing was, my wife is a legend. She was standing above me, bit of like Valentine's Day domination kind of thing. But like not like that was it. That was the shot, very artfully shot. And basically I got when it came out, I got an email from like this woman from Land Rover, and was like, you know, this has come out. You know, we just can't work with you anymore. This is, you know, this is not what Land Rover drivers want to see. And I was like, hold on a minute. So I copied in like the marketing director of like the UK. And I was just like, hold on a minute. You're firing me after 12 years of being with you. And I'd gone above and beyond for these guys. Like I'd done loads of extra footage. I'd got a mention in magazines. I tried to do loads of things to be like a good person, because I really value the brand. I love Land Rover. I think it's fantastic cars. Love the brand. And they were like, we don't think Land Rover readers want to see this. I went, well, Land Rover drivers don't read the fucking Sun. So that's the first thing you've not got to worry about. That's not the point. I went, so what's upset you? Well, the headline says we have sex every day. I went, well, if Land Rover drivers don't have sex, you're going to run out of Land Rover drivers pretty quickly. Like, what do you... So I put this stuff in, and just like, look, you know, we're terminating your contract. And that was it. I got done for that. I've had lots of these things, you know, and I think that's why I don't get as much work as I would like, because people are terrified what's going to come out of my mouth. People, you know, want to be seen as vanilla, you know. And the interesting thing with that is I went to Pride last year in London, and you've got all these companies holding like placards representing their companies. And you speak to them and say, oh, that's amazing that company's so good around LGBT plus, LGBTQ plus rights, etc. And they're like, oh no, we have to pay to come here and we have to take a day off. And I was like, well, why are you advertising that company? And it's because Everybody wants to be seen to be doing the right stuff. Yeah. Everybody's terrified about somebody writing on Instagram going, well, that company doesn't have any minorities working for it. This company doesn't. And it's just gone mad. And I hopefully that common sense should be what dictates. So I think lots of people are losing all sorts of endorsements everywhere.
Matt, we put it on our Instagram, you know, for people to ask their questions. And one we got sent 100 times, I say, and this one was from Brendan. It was like, do you actually hate Freddie Flintoff? This is obviously referring to your appearance on A League of Their Own.
Yeah, no, so the thing with the Freddie Flintoff thing, and it's really irritating because it's kind of a bit of naivety from my part, was that when we went on the show, we were supposed to do this skit where I'd gone on and done some juggling, he'd give me some shit, I buried him with some chat, right? And it was a bit like... It was a bit like, you know, they went to go head and head. Now, for me, Freddie Flintoff is one of, you know, England's greatest ever cricketers, absolute hero of a bloke, lad, loves to piss, everything else. And I thought, interesting enough, like reading some of the stuff recently about his like battle with bulimia and all this kind of stuff. It's so interesting he's gone through this kind of stuff, and I really admire him for that. Then when I went on the TV show, we were supposed to go head to head on this thing, and he said, look, I tell you what we'll do. Instead of just having a proper pillow fight, I'll push you off. And when I get up, you push me and we'll have a little bit of a to and fro. So I was like, yeah, sounds brilliant. Didn't tell anybody, it was live studio audience, didn't tell any of the producers. Now, I reckon I've got the same level of acting skills as The Rock, but he's making 70 million quid a year. So I think maybe there's potential for me to get a role in something. And he pushed me off, I pushed him, and we had a bit of to and fro, but I was like, acting like I'm deadly serious. But the point is that, for all the years, I wouldn't just push someone. You'd bang someone. You'd just hit them. You wouldn't mess around. Like, I wouldn't just get in a battle. So, you know, he pushed me, and everyone stopped. So I was like, cut. And people, like producers, came down the stairs. Everyone came downstairs. Or studio audience went deathly quiet. Obviously, as soon as it went cut, I was like, yeah, gave him a hug. Everything was fine. But they thought it was a genuine fight. So everyone lost their shit. And so basically, when people watched the programme, everyone was like, fucking Haskell, Flintoff would do him. I was like, firstly, let's not get ahead of ourselves. You know, I battered Flintoff. No question about it. I mean, so that's not in my mind. But everyone was getting into me. And then when they did the series, the start of the next series, they interviewed him and showed him highlights. They went, oh, what happened here? And he went, yeah, Haskell, bit of a dick, that bloke. And I was like, I was like, hold on a minute. It was your idea. We were having a clear play fight. It was 100% like, do you genuinely think I'd let someone push me over five times or get upset on a TV show when I was being paid to be on there? Like, you'd have to properly hit me to get me upset. But also, you know, I don't really think, you know, with all due respect, Freddie Flintoff's great with a cricket bat. I've seen him in the ring. I'm not that worried about what, you know. So anyway, but that was a bit annoying, really, that he threw me under the bus just for, you know, sort of, I call it lying to make friends. So, you know, it was a bit annoying, but fuck it, it'll be all right.
Okay, look, we know you got to go, but one more quick one if you can. People ask best and worst thing about being an I'm a Celeb.
What I want to know is it really like we see on the television, or is it, yeah?
Yeah, I thought, to be honest, because someone had told me that, you know, cut, boom, straight into a canteen, five star, like, all you can eat, like, you know. Do you remember the Little Chef's Olympic breakfast? I thought I was going to be smashing that in. Nah, lads, it was exactly like it was. You know, the hardest thing about it was the food, just because... you know, I use an app on my phone called MyFitnessPal, right? And when they came in, they told me, you're going to get 1,200 calories minimum, right? And I was like, from 5,000 to 1,200, I was like, shit, you know, that's pretty hard to do, but I think I can do it. When I got in and I realised that it was four spoonfuls, so four, like, dessert spoonfuls of rice in the morning and four dessert spoonfuls of beans at lunch with a little bit of oil to cook them in, and that's all you were getting, when I put that in MyFitnessPal, I came to 100 calories. That's a fucking 100 calories from 6 in the morning till 8 at night. 100 calories, right? You get more calories. Like, I've got a piece of cake here that I haven't eaten because I'm on the... Mate, that's like 300 calories. That was horrific. And by the end of it, you know, and then when we won the stars, they would deliver, like, crocodile feet, some vegetables and some fruit. And you're like, there's no calories in there. There's absolutely no calories. So I lost 12 kgs from in 18 days. And I basically started to, like, you know, every time I did anything, I'd get out of breath. I was like, because the way I dealt with the boredom was just doing jobs. I was constantly collecting water, boiling water, making sure everyone's okay. How are you? How's your head? Because it was a bit like a pre-season camp for me. Stuck with a load of people I never met before, shit food, shit accommodation. And the challenges were kind of like fitness, and you were up for selection. So I was fine. I didn't miss my, I mean, I obviously missed my wife, but I was good at compartmentalizing. I was like, I'm here to do a job, you know, just be nice to everyone, stay calm. And there was times towards the end of it where every time I did anything, I'd have to go down and lie down for about half an hour. And I almost, had a panic attack waiting for some food once. I was sitting and like, you know, there was a time when Kate Garraway sort of, every time we went to do anything, and it was always like, you go first, now you go first, now you go first. And after like an hour of everyone trying to be so polite, I was like, listen, let's just go, women go first, you sort amongst yourself, and the lads will go after, because good manners, this is what I believe. Like, well, no, you go first. So I ended up, I was like, listen, can everyone shut the fuck up, please? Girls go first, that's it, let's cut this shit out. Well, I think, no, you don't think, get on with it. So that was sort of the downfall of me, because I sort of treated people as if I was in a team where you do what's best for your team. So someone was moaning, if someone was moaning and whinging, I would be like, look, stop moaning and whinging, you know, you're not going to fix it. And but they don't show that. They don't show that what they're saying is affecting everybody else. So I sort of did what I would do in a normal environment. But the best part of it was probably the fact I got asked to go on the show, you know, 14 million people every night. And actually, bizarrely, fans of I'm a Celebrity are much nicer than sports fans. They come up and say really nice things. Whereas rugby fans come up and go, oh, right, mate, I used to think you were shit, but I've seen you play a couple of good times for England. Like, cheers. Where I'm a Celeb fans come up and go, oh, I thought you were brilliant, you should have won, you know.
James's biography, What a Flanker, is out now and available from all good bookshops. And just in case you didn't know, a couple of times during that interview, he referenced his wife, who is Chloe Madley, of course, the daughter of Richard and Judy, big presenters over there in Britain. A lovely woman, too. His dream job is being the physio for the Tip Camogie team. It's time for Noel Furlong, and it's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News! It's Noel's News!
Can I ask you a personal question?
Oh, God, yes.
Is there a smell off me?
Not particularly, no.
Would you go on record as saying that there is no distinct smell of petrol and sultanas off me?
I will go on record as saying there is no smell of petrol or sultanas.
Because there's a vicious rumour, a nasty rumour going around that there's a smell off me. Now, I may have used petrol as mouthwash a couple of times, right? But in my defence, I'm old and fucking mental. We'd actually done the job.
Did it?
Yeah, I use unleaded. Okay. No, you always use.
Never use diesel.
No, come on now. John Paul would be tinkering with cars and he'd petrol inside in old bottles. And one of them said spearmint flavour. Well, how am I to know what a spearmint tastes like? Who am I? Gordon Randy.
Gordon Randy.
Last week, I'll tell you where I was. There was a blitz on.
Okay.
There was an under 10 blitz. Carnage. Now, I didn't know what a blitz was. I never heard of a blitz. Okay. Apparently, it's a load of matches in one day.
Yeah.
Like your Tinder. We had Bally in the first game.
Well,
I am being accused of putting out a dud team. Now, they were a bit young.
How young?
Corner forward was in a pram. Full forward shat himself.
What?
I'm sure he'd stop a good fella. They got bet anyway. But they defended gallantly. They were up for it. I had him pumped.
G'd up.
I had him G'd up by. There was a boy out in the middle of the field, screaming, mad for puckouts. And it turns out he was just screaming. Because he made a boo-boo in his shorts. I said, look, I haven't done myself. My motto in life has always been, change your underpants and keep hurling.
That's a motto to live by.
But I wanted to get it added onto the club crest. And the committee wouldn't go for it. They were too old-fashioned. So we got Rovers in the next game. And I put out my strong team.
Yeah.
And we fucking lettered them.
That's the stuff.
12-27 to 2 pints. I reffed it myself. And I think it would be fair to say I left it off.
Did you?
Now, I might have had Mincer Griffin in corner forward on the under 10 team. You know him because he drives a forklift in a co-op. The under 10 jersey was bet on him. He's 30. At least. Okay, at least.
At least.
He was scoring goals from everywhere. The pitch is only 50 yards long.
How did you get away with that?
A Rovers went ballistic. Went ballistic. I had him warned. I said, Mincer, don't open your mouth. I said, he is from Ukraine. He had big growth spurt. So I lined up anyway. I wanted to collect the trophy. And they told me, no, it's a blitz. Everybody wins. Oh. I said, listen, pal. If everybody wins, but only one team scored 59 goals in 3 games, I need silverware. Fong went down the van anyway, and he got a bucket of Dulux paint.
Fong did.
And he put legs on it, and he wrote Championi on it. Robert's fucked off anyway. We had a presentation to hold on. Oh, a photographer. Mayor was there. Instead of like spraying out champagne on each other, I just fucked white paint and leads. Covered them in it. Championi. They all got a Carvery.
Very, very nice.
Tea, tart, 4 pints, then home. Some of the young lads wanted to go for chips. Noel, can we get chips? I said, there'd be no fucking chips in this team. And shut up and drink your pint. Jeez, they were locked after. Young Hogan got sick. I made him clean it up. Clean that up with your bare hands now. I got sick again. Then they all started getting sick looking at him. I said, will you stop? We'll get fucked out. I tell you, we were football bits next week and I don't know where we're going to go after. If we win that, we'll break up the town. So, that's where I was.
Last week.
Yeah, if you must know.
Hence the absence, yeah.
Yes. News. International news. Do you know who lives in Hong Kong? Everyone. Loads of them. One of the most densely populated cities in the world. One of the most unaffordable places to buy a house in the world.
Wow.
They put a house on top of another house. Apartments, they call it. You've no yard, you've no shed. You're living up in the air. You're living up in the sky. This may be the reason why many Chinese people can fly.
I'm fairly sure that Chinese people can't
that
fly.
That is a fact. How do you know they can't fly?
I've never seen them fly.
How many Chinese people do you know intimately?
A few.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How well do you know them? You have no proof. Prove to me. Now, rent is so high in Hong Kong, that which is not part of China, but anyway, many people in their 20s and 30s are still living with their parents. Right? Now, this is understandable, but the issue arises when they want to have the sex.
Boom, boom.
The old Nicky English behind the back. Yeah. The old Port Leash pie ball. You were the old Moonkind donut.
That's really...
A bit of the old Sticky Finnerty. And you know, your parents would be in the next room.
Yeah.
Paper tin walls. Mammy and Daddy be turning nationwide up to the bollocks. When Joe Dolan is playing, don't come a knocking. Some people find this a bit awkward. What's yeah, not me.
Six.
Yeah, well, with your parents in the next room.
Oh.
Not me. I let John Paul hurl away.
Do you?
Yeah, now he's a grown man and he's back living at home. If he wants to bring a queer one home of a Saturday night, there are two consulting adults. Leave it off.
Consulting.
Leave it off. He's in the room next door. I can hear him. I tell you one thing. He put in some performance the weekend.
Did he?
He put in some performance Saturday night. And I tell you, I don't like to be bet. I don't like to be wet. I started giving Carmel out. How are you doing?
Hello.
He was going at it. Hello. I was going at it. And I wasn't stopping until he stopped. In the room next door. Well, I tell you, he had me to the pin in me collar. He's a fit young lad. And your one was shouting, "Oh, John Paul." I said, "Fuck this." I started roaring, "Han Carmel." They were banging against their wall. I nearly went out to the shed for a sledgehammer. I said, "I will knock this wall if I have to. Show him who's top dog. There is only one king of the jungle." He nearly done me hip.
We laid up.
I was bushed, but I wasn't telling him that. I seen him the next morning. I just said, "Woof, woof, wanker." Hong Kong, if you want to be alone, they rent a room in what they call a love hotel. Okay? This started in the 60s when you can rent a room by the hour. Now, yes, right, some of them are pure filth, seedy, right? But some of them apparently are very nice. And self-service check-in online. You don't meet nobody, very discreet. Your room has television, internet, except not that you need any of those things. But people now, because the city is so busy, are young people are renting a room just for the crack.
Wow.
Just to hang out. Is it at the window or what? I don't know, but they shouldn't be doing it. But they're hanging anyway.
Hang out with each other.
Yeah, whatever that means. So it's becoming very normal. Yeah. It's like being a vegetarian, almost. The new normal, as I'm being told.
Who told you that?
I heard it's normal now to be vegetarian. A lot of people do it.
Okay.
I don't know anyone who does it, but
I suppose
I can tell the vegetarian a mile away.
Why?
That's a fact.
Why?
They have very small ears. And no sense of smell. That is a fact.
I don't think it is a fact.
I was sitting beside young Abby Ryan on the train to Dublin. Mm. She told me she's a vegetarian. Well, I farted the whole way. Did she mind? No. She was unconscious by Barry Brophy. That is a fact.
Oh, my God.
So the number of love hotels is growing fast.
Wow.
It's big business now. Yeah. All over in mainland China as well.
Will you visit a love hotel?
Well, sure, I can't leave the country now.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Will you start one here then?
No, like I said, I don't mind. Who's in the next room?
You'll do it.
I'll talk out.
Man, no.
Do you reckon they take off here?
Ooh, I don't think so, no.
Not wild fellas have Honda Civics. You can give her the old Joe Hayes ground stroke. Give her the old So I just want to say best of luck to everyone in Hong Kong.
Pretty good.
You've had a tough couple of years. We're rooting for you.
Literally.
Literally. What?
Rooting.
Yeah, we're rooting for you.
Oh, it just has double meaning.
Words mean one thing. Why do you have to be weird about it? Like,
it's just another word. It's...
Well, that's enough for me. Over and out. You're gone very strange. Very strange.
Oh, brilliant. Her dream man is someone who can actually put their mug in the dishwasher rather than leaving it in the sink. Mara, what's your mystery topic this week?
It's a question for you lads. Oh. Would you lend money to a friend? Okay. Now, I'll throw a few statistics and facts your ways while you're thinking about this, right? So, according to a 2019 survey by Bankrate, 60% of Americans have helped a friend or family member by lending the money, expecting to get paid back. Of those respondents, 37% reported losing money and 21% said that their personal relationship had ended. Now, I've a couple of experiences of lending people money. So there was one person who I think I lended maybe about €300. And it was grand. I was like, "Oh, pay me back when you can." So I think they'd pay me like 150. And then I didn't hear anything from them. And like, I'm really like Stewie Griffin when it comes to this, like, where's my money? Where's my money? Where's my money? and they lit up on me. They were like, don't have it at the minute. Like, they got really angry with me. And I was just like, you know what? Don't worry about repaying money, but never ask me for money again. So, but I did get stung out another time again. I paid for flights for a friend. And I was just like, you know, it's grand. We'll be going on holidays again. You can pay for flights for me whenever, you know, whenever you're flush with cash. I think she just like lost her job or something like that. It's been 4 years and I don't think she's going to be paying for any flights anytime soon. So, yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, she's listening.
This is it. I'm like, you still owe me, like, the flights were, like, about 200 quid. Like, it's like, you know I work for RTE, but, like, I'm not on, like, Ryan Tubney's wages, okay?
I reckon Maura's just done this mystery topic to get that 200 bob back.
Okay, so there's a couple of things, right, that says that, right? The advice online is loans to family and friends tend to be open-ended. So if a loan's not a priority, without a deadline, that the borrower, that's going to become their last priority. Another reason why you shouldn't lend friends money, it's difficult to ask for the money back. You know, like some people find it hard to say, yo, where's the money you owe me? Number four, it can make family gatherings awkward. Like there's nothing worse being at a wedding and seeing a lad and like thinking, he owes me 50 from a night out, and then seeing the lad absolutely splashing the cash, buying like a round of Jaeger bombs and no sign of giving you that 50. And then what I think is very true is that if somebody's bad with their money, they'll keep asking for money. They'll keep saying like, oh, okay, I'll pay it back to pay it. Like, I think you're encouraging bad behavior, bad financial irresponsibility if you're just constantly lending a friend money. Now, I know Johnny B is quite tight, so I can't imagine people would go to him looking for money. Max, they say you'd be a good lad to lend a sub of 50 on a night out.
I was a good lad to borrow it. I can tell you that. Oh, Jesus Christ. Actually, when I first moved down here and stuff, like I had to pay rent and I obviously had to try and buy a car and stuff. I was on shit wages, so I never had a bob. So no one would ever be asking me for money because they knew I never had much money. Like, I lost my job. And then I went on what we called the buyback scheme.
Yeah.
Which was with the Chalk Ice, where I was on the dole. And had no money. And then 1 week, Chaka's like, look, I'll give you a lend of 100 quid because we were going out somewhere and he wanted me to come.
Well, you are tremendous fun.
So he was basically like, I'll give you 100 euro, give it back to me whenever, like, you know, no panic, open-ended. And I'll give it to you or whatever. And I'm a freak. So if I get money off someone, I will put in an envelope and hand it back to him like ASAP. I'm absolutely anal on that. I hate the thought of owing anybody money. So like even now, if like someone does a job for us or something and we pay them, we're like, right, let's get that done, because like, I hate the thought of not paying anybody.
Yeah. And when we came back from America, like, because there is like mixed expenses, like with like rent in the car and that, you were like, I don't think the plane had even landed or I hadn't even gotten home. I got a text from you. It's like, will you just send me on all the bills so we can sort it all out? It's like,
oh yeah. I
jet lagged. I'm like, it's grand. Like, you know, I know you're good for it, Max.
Like, yeah. I'd be a freak like that, but I took the 100 quid off Chalk Ice anyway. And then like the following Wednesday, I got me dole and I was like, bang, look, there's your 100 quid back. And he was like, listen, man, like, you know, you're probably stuck at the moment. There's no rush on it. I was like, take it now. And I was on like 145 on the dole. I wasn't even getting the full dole. So I had 45 quid to live on for a week. And then that Friday, Chaka was like, oh, do you want to go for a pint? I was like, nah, I can't, like, you know, whatever. He's like, look, there's 100 euro. So basically, every week he'd give me 100 euro and then every Wednesday I'd give it back to him and then every Friday he'd give me back the 100. So we just ended up calling it the buyback scheme. He would buy stuff off me then.
Any old GA jerseys you
had?
Yeah,
I'd have like some GA, rare GA jersey and he'd be like, I'll buy that off you. So I was just basically selling me stuff to go out. So I'm not one to, now I'm lucky now I'm not doing like, I'm doing grant or whatever. Like, you know, I wouldn't be going around lending anybody any money. Like if you want to lose money, lend it to someone. But if one of my close friends asked me, I was like, hey, give us like a reasonable loan. Like, you know.
Yeah, but John, at our age, less and less people need a lend.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I have, like, none of the lads have ever asked me in recent times.
No,
like,
borrowing money was really common up to 24 or 5.
Yeah.
And then it starts to wean off a bit. But then...
You should have yourself sorted.
A little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, when I was in my early 20s, it was like...
I have €4 to my name, but I want the sesh.
Yeah. So I think at that age, there's a lot of borrowed money. But like, if one of my friends came to me and was in trouble and genuinely needed it, and I'd probably
send him to the credit union and be like, look, they're fucking sound. Like, yeah, they look after you.
He just asked Johnny for a note and he actually has a credit union application for him in his back pocket folded up. He just gets it out and it's like, you should fill that in. I know the manager down there. I've good time for him.
Put in a word for you when I get a chance.
But I think if it was something genuine, like, you know, I need to do this, or I need to fucking do this for my job, or like, I'm stuck this week, I'll give it back to you. You'd probably maybe make an allowance for him, and you would. You'd give him a couple of bob if they were stuck. But as you said, Mara, like, I know lads around town here and even at home that like owe everyone money, and then every weekend they're out drinking. Mm. Now, if somebody owed me money,
and like, you sought them out.
There was a particular company in Ireland that at one stage we had done money with, or we had done a job for them, and they owed us money. And I'm telling you now, there was a phone call made as we touched down in Dublin Airport one time, and I was going to their office in Dublin, and I was going getting the money we were owed.
We had some large men with us.
We had a couple of large men with us, and we were ready to go and retrieve the money. Our accountant had sent them letters, the whole lot, and to no avail. But when we did threaten that, miraculously the money was put in our account within around 5 minutes. So I'm anal on money.
Yeah, I remember.
But I'll give you a lend if you're stuck.
I gave a mate of mine a lend of money, and then he paid it back, like... Go on, there. I must have said it to him once, honestly, and then he paid it back and left me €25 short. And what do you say then? It was probably like, I think it was about like 225, and he gave me 200. I was like, go on, so Jesus, don't be weird about it. And then,
you just stopped lending it then.
Thanks.
but it's like, don't lend money to someone if you know they're going to be dodgy paying it back.
And yeah.
Like, I'm sure if your friends, like, it puts you in an awful spot.
Yeah. And you want to lend it to be nice, but you want them to be like we've often, like, lended money to each other, and then someone would say to you, hey, I'm not forgetting about that money.
Yeah.
I'll drop it over to you. And that's reassuring.
Yeah.
Rather than having you asking for it. But, like, I'm telling you now, there's groups of, like, lads in particular, I don't know about girls, they seem to be better with their money, to be honest.
Yeah.
But like, I know lads that are like, fucker, he owes me 50 from like 6 years ago. I'd be like, say it to him. No. You know what I mean? Like, they just want to complain about it and blacken your man as opposed to ask for the money.
As well, you get older in our circles anyway, like if somebody, say, did a little job for you and you owed them 100 or 200 quid or whatever, it would turn into, sure, I'll put you down for the county draw.
Yeah, that's evil, lad. I don't agree with that. Money's money.
I have done that to people I know.
That's scandalous. I said that to you at the time as well.
What, you reckon I should have paid them in cash and then asked for it back?
Yeah. You do a job for payment.
But the club needed the money.
I know. I can see that point as well.
Okay, whatever about lending money. What I wouldn't lend somebody is equipment.
Oh, no.
Been in the band and I've lended people like... solid stuff.
He lent me your speakers one day when I went through the DJ phase.
Pretended to be a DJ.
Where I conned the local school into telling them I was a DJ, and I got 200 quid for the night. That was I'll probably incriminate myself there.
On the rock and roll, John.
I was on the rock and roll, and then like took the DJ money and was like, sweet. And it was my first ever DJ set, and it was closed down after 15 minutes. It was a bit, like, I could not believe I earned that money for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Took longer to put the speakers up.
Why was it closed down after 15 minutes?
Some lad threw a rock at a cop car. But like, I swear to God, I had Johnny's gear and he was...
Way doing another gig.
Yeah, he was in the band and he was like, man, that gear is expensive now, mind it. So for most of the 15 minutes, I was trying to like, not have to scrap 6 years, but like, just forcefully get them away from the speakers. Yeah, it would have ended in tears. I'm glad they blew it up when they did. Anyway, that's a whole different story.
Because I borrowed a trailer once. I borrowed a double axle trailer once and crashed it.
Oh.
Actually jackknifed it off the motorway, and that was it. I was like, oh my God, I never want to borrow Atten ever again.
That's a dose.
That was an absolute dose. Yeah.
Did you get me a new one?
I fixed it.
Oh.
It was grand. Like,
yeah.
I had to spend money and all to fix it.
That's good to hear.
I didn't just bait it with a hammer. Like.
You fattered head job, lad, just going, listen, that's as good as when I got it off you. And then it's like, man, it's completely bent.
No, but if you look at it from the other side.
Yeah.
And because you know what, like, people would be always looking for stuff like chainsaws and that now, and I wouldn't give anyone a lend of that. It's just
no. I think money. Like, look, if you're stuck or whatever, like you know, if you're out in the night out and someone's like, "Jeez, I forgot my wallet."
Oh yeah,
you throw them a couple of bob, like, or whatever, like. But if someone's coming to you, being like, "Can I loan a, like, you know, 500 quid? What for? I have no money this weekend." Well, you're not going to have money next weekend either, are you? To pay me back the 500, like, so let's get it right. Do the maths. And if you're one of the people around the town, who around any town here in Ireland or anywhere abroad, anywhere in the world that listens to this, and you're one of those people that owe people money, you should be fucking ashamed of yourself.
Look.
Pay the bill. How could you look someone in the eye? How could you walk in, say, for a car free, and there's someone sitting down and you're like, "Oh, fucking owe him 100 quid.
Some people are just shameless. But if I'm lending somebody now, if somebody was short, genuinely forgot their wallet or whatever, what I would say to them is, like, I'll revolute you the money. So that way they have a record of it, and that, like, you know, I think it's possible on the Revolut app to request money as well. So they don't pay you back.
Send them actually changed the game, because it's fair handy, you know. Like, I was trying to sell those county draw tickets as well. Like, and lads just revoluted, aren't you? It's dead handy. Like, you're not left looking for. Good topic, Maura.
Thanks, Maura.
That's good. Me and Johnny are going to go and pull the heads off each other now off air.
Do I owe you money?
No. I there's a good distinct possibility I probably owe you money, all right, I'd say. Don't forget to rate, review, and tell your friends about Two Johnny's podcast.
I definitely won't hold it against you for the rest of our lives. It wasn't €7.
Don't forget to rate, review, and tell your friends about the Two Johnny's podcast.
Tell your friends about the Two Johnny's podcast.
Use the hashtag Two Johnny's pod. That's the number two to get in touch. You can get us on Instagram at the Two Johnny's, Facebook, Jay's email, podcast at thetwojohnnies.ie. It's all there. You'll find us. And we'll reply to you, and we'll all be happily ever after. Now it's time to round off the podcast with our yurts and
dirts
of the week. This is where we give our highlights and our lowlights of the week. John B., what have you got?
I got a text from Fastway Couriers. Your package is at the Apple Green Garage at the other side of town. And I was like, boys, I live on the main road right beside the biggest industrial estate in town.
It's pay at mine, man.
Well, you live out the country. And I was talking to one in the shop, and I was like, is this a common occurrence? And she said, yeah. And people even paid an extra bit to be like, it's like an extra few quid that sometimes if you live out the country, and they're like, drop it to my gaff.
But, like, I paid for a package at Christmas.
Mm.
And, like, I put down my delivery address as my address. And, like, I got no thing to be like, do you want to deliver to your door, or do you want to fuck it into Apple Green?
They just put it in the garage.
Just put it in the garage. And never told me. It was a helmet from my sister.
Yeah.
And I was ringing micro.
She was going driving a motorbike.
No, it was like a hurling helmet. And I was like, I paid for the helmet. And your mom was like, it's been sent. And then I couldn't get through to the courier. He couldn't understand me. So we ended up, in the end, by chance, I went in to just get a chicken roll one day. And your mom was like, did you order something off micro? I was like, I did, yeah. This was like the day before Christmas. I got Abby another present. Like, And then she was like, there you go. That's been here 3 weeks.
Scandalous.
Oh my god, I swear, like, to god.
The drivers, we know you're under pressure. It is a tough job and all, but you know, this industry, it needs to pull its socks up if that's the crack.
I agree. That is a good one, Johnny.
Okay, John, what have you got?
My dirt of the week is I recently changed my car, and but this happened on motor car as well, and it's really just been bugging me lately, because this car does it particularly a lot more. Every time I get into the car and I turn on the engine, or music plays. Two Johnny's music plays. What's been playing now since I got the new car is Shift by Randy Marx, the 2020 version. And this isn't me plugging that song, although if you want to listen and download it, do. But I swear to God, it's embarrassing. I was giving a young lad a lift home from training the other day. And, like, I'm the coach. And I'm, like, meant to be, you know, setting an example. And he gets in and he's like, oh, geez, nice car. I was like, yeah, cheers. Turn on the engine. Bam, 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 bam. And then he just looks at me, just say, are you listening to your own music?
Like, driving around town.
And then the other day it happened to me in the car park. I must have had the speaker turned up really loud, listening to something else.
Yeah.
And then when I came back to the car, I, like, turned it on and, like, had the windows down. And then that song just started pumping out. I was like, I swear to God, I nearly put my fist through the radio to try and get off. So if someone can tell me
why,
first of all, why that song? And secondly, how do I stop it? Like, even just put the Drake or Jesus, anything. Except, because I know one of the boys were telling me that in his dash, whatever you were searching last on your internet browser comes up
Oh.
on the screen. when you turn on the car. And he said, like, he's been giving his mother a lift to mass, and it's like, you don't want to know, like, hentai or something. Like. So, yeah, just tell me why that song's playing and how do I eradicate that? It's quite embarrassing for me. Even my mother said it to me.
Okay, I just want to say a quick straightener. I had a few people in touch about something I said on our television show. They took it as a jibe at Tipperary football. I was slagging Smacks that he built up his career and then he moved care and that he wasn't quite as good as it led on to be. And the joke was on Smacks, not on Tip football. And a couple of people have said to me that I was putting the boot into Tipperary football. They said it a lot stronger than that. But everyone should know. Everyone should know.
I thought they were ringing to congrats us, in fairness.
That, like, myself and Smacks have always tried to promote GAA. And out of all the people I thought I would insult, GAA supporters of Tipperary, I thought would be way down the list. So, lads, it's just a joke.
Yeah, but the joke was aimed towards me and not Tip football. They've seen 5 seconds of a 6 minute
bit
clip. Yeah. So, you know, take from what you want. I don't really give a fuck.
I know, but
there you go. But that's it for this week. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back on Thursday on the Patreon.
Oh, wait, 1 sec. Maura, can you give us your dirt? Maura has a dirt.
I got a dog kennel. Right. I got this dog kennel for Ted and Jody. And it's the size of a feckin' Wendy house. It's massive because both of them have to fit in it. Like, and assembled it in the kitchen. Grand. Like, you know, like assembling flat pack stuff. Like, I'd rather, you know, oh, I'd just rather pull out my fingernails than do it. Anyway, I did it because I love my dogs. Went to bring it outside and realized that we don't have a key for the second one of the two French doors, so couldn't. So I had to pay a locksmith €120 come to unlock, put a new set. Because there's no way I was taking apart the kennel and reassembling outside.
Oh, Maura, you're some character. I was wondering what you had in your Instagram the other night, looking for a locksmith. And also, if anybody wants a giggle, go on to Maura's Instagram and look up her fuck up when she worked with Northern Sound and she's reading the news. You're in for a treat. Check that out on her Instagram. We'll be back on Thursday on the Patreon. Next Monday we'll be here and we'll be free as normal. From me, Johnny Smacks.
From me, Johnny B.
From me, Maura.
See you next week. Good luck.